The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
And a big welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. On the line with me, my friend Dave Zanotti. Dave, the world, especially the broadcast world, and even within that, to break that down a bit farther, the conservative talk radio world suffered a great loss on Wednesday with the loss of Rush Limbaugh. I'm just excited to have you on to talk about this. You spend your life, as do I now, right now, on radio, and this guy's made a big difference, hasn't he?
America has lost one of her greatest friends, and we all knew this was coming. We all thought about it, but it caught all of us with the very stark reality of the realization that a voice that has been in the airwaves and has been in our minds for over 30 years is no longer with us. That person who held ground where he sought truth and tried to speak the truth and tried to speak hope in the context of truth is no more. And I think that the entire country feels like we've lost someone and something very important.
I agree completely. And you know, when you think about the world of politics, you have to set that world aside for a moment, because within the world of politics, we've seen a much greater value be fought for. It's not just this side of the aisle or that side of the aisle, but it's actually now getting into a moral question, even from the Bible, as to the definition of what is right and what is wrong. And so often, what Rush would be fighting for would be that side of the value point. What's right, biblically speaking? And I know that he was not a saint. He'd be the first to tell you that he wasn't a saint. But boy, what he fought for was worth fighting for. And he was not afraid to take on that battle.
Well, one thing I'm certain of, Mike, is that Rush Limbaugh believed what he said. It was not make-believe. It wasn't a shtick or an act. He was a great entertainer, without a doubt. And he did have plenty of talent on loan from God. He returned that talent now back to the place from whence it came. He knew where the talent came from. And I think it's important to also note that Rush Limbaugh was very careful coming up in a tradition of biblical faith to not wear that faith on his sleeve, because the lane that he chose was a lane that was uniquely tailored toward non-religious and commercial radio. And so he felt that's where he could best make his case and the language that he spoke in. But as we got particularly close to the end, Rush was very candid with people about his personal faith and trust in Jesus Christ and in Jesus Christ alone, and the peace that he felt about his time of departure and his deep and abiding belief that it was God's mercy and in many ways the prayers of people who so faithfully lifted him up that gave him the strength to finish strong. And Rush did teach us much. Now, no one is nominating Rush for sainthood. He was a man of virtue who struggled mightily. He was what Chesterton called and what Tolkien talked about in regards to being an edible hero. Mm-hmm. Rush was a guy who could be broken and was broken, and admitted his brokenness and confessed to the world how he had failed. And he got up and he kept going. And he kept going toward truth and toward hope. So we know one thing about Rush Limbaugh. He believed what he said.
He did. He believed it. And you could tell that that belief was backed by a passion. He didn't just express something, but he expressed it with his whole being, which His personality was larger than life. I mean, who can among us, who could have but Rush Limbaugh gotten away with things like half my brain tied around my back just to make things even? I first started listening to that, and then all of the musical parodies that he did years ago, I found him, you mentioned what an entertainer he was. I found him to be the most unique blend of somebody that was on one hand just absolutely hilarious in his viewpoint, but then he hits you with a zinger. He's got you laughing, and then all of a sudden he delivers something that was not only truthful, but it just was good old downright common sense right. And that's not something you find on the radio too often, to have that kind of command. And, you know, I love what Dave Ramsey, I don't know if you saw his quote about this or not, but he sent out this tweet. He said this: America and radio lost a great man and a good friend. Rush's humor, intellect, and passion catapulted him to become an American icon. You had to love him or hate him. He didn't give you a choice. I loved him. Few people can be credited with literally starting an industry, but Rush was the Elvis of talk radio. He invented it. There will be attempts to fill his shoes, but none of us can. R.I.P. Rip, rest in peace, my friend. You will be missed. That's Dave Ramsey, and I thought that's well said.
You know, in times like this, Mike, it's always a challenge because we're hurt. It's a gut punch kind of thing. We're hurt and we're looking for words. And it's often a time that when we look for words that we'll use parallels and we'll use different people in comparison. I want to tell you, I don't think that I can come up with any parallel for Rush Limbaugh because he was so genuine. He came from nowhere. He made his choices. He made difficult choices. He owned the consequences. He chose AM radio when everyone thought that was the most foolish thing in the world to do. But he chose AM radio, and he completely resuscitated that entire genre of communications when everyone said, no way. Rush Limbaugh went in the outdoor and made a difference. He changed jobs when people said he shouldn't. He stuck with things. He was loyal. There's a lot of great things about Rush that we can talk about. But I think the thing that touches me the most is he loved America. He was not ashamed of America. He did not see America through uneducated or uninformed eyes. He did not see America as perfect, but he understood the American ideal and the fundamental virtue that comes from those ideas. And in that regard, he was great for our country. He was a friend of our country. He was an apologist for the ideal of our country. And we began radio the year after Rush Limbaugh got started, 1 year after. He started in 88. We started in 89 with the Public Square. And so we've been able to watch that career literally from behind a microphone the entire time. And just yesterday, I was on the line with a number of radio stations. And one of the stations I was on was WTN in Nashville, where Rush was on the other station in town. And all of the hosts on WTN talking about Rush got choked up. They couldn't finish their sentences at somewhere in the conversation because of their love for this man. When people who are actually professional competitors of yours grieve at your passing because they feel like they lost a dear friend, wow, that speaks a lot about your life.
It really does. And he was loved by so many. I mean, you think about being the kind of the inventor of what we understand today of talk radio. And that's something that regardless of whether you're a secular talk radio station or a Christian talk radio station like what we have, where it's talk and teaching, it doesn't really matter because he and his personality and his gifting was so huge and so widespread that he was kind of like a role model, if you will, for the very ability to tackle a subject. And I don't know how he did it, Dave. Honestly, I don't know how he was able to day in and day out take on people, take on live calls. And sometimes, you know, he was baited with those calls. I've heard calls where he thought somebody was going to talk about something, and they had a completely different agenda and tore into him. And he would handle that so well day in and day out. You start believing that little line that he would joke about, half his brain tied around, because I don't think he let us know his whole brain. It was huge.
We could go on all day about the lingo and the words that Rush created and brought into culture. You just described his famous seminar caller. You know, the person that had just gone to some left-wing seminar and then was sent out to call Rush Limbaugh and try to get him off the track or try to upset him or something, and how they would get through snurdly. Rush had a lot of help, to be sure. Something else that Rush had was a great network of contacts.
Yes.
That he kept very private, that he kept very confidential, that he was able to vet his thoughts off of and to discern reality. He wasn't always right, but he was seldom wrong. Now, Rush also has given a lot of tribute in regards to helping to build and to sustain a division of the Republican Party, if you will. And that's something that we're uniquely not involved in. Our radio broadcast at the Public Square has been fiercely independent from the beginning. In fact, if there's anything I would have loved to have tried to help Rush Limbaugh get to was one more step toward political independence, because I think that the vast majority of his audience is not Republican. I think that's a big part of his audience, but the vast majority of it is just everyday folk who don't care about political parties. And I think Rush knew that. But I think he took a strategic and a tactical point toward moving to that spot. Now, he and I don't share that worldview precisely. I think we're much better off thinking of life as free agents, and that our country needs to move to that direction. But all that to say, it's okay. In Russia's worldview, there's room if we're moving in the same direction. And the same thing we feel. There was always room because we felt we were going in much the same direction toward the ideals. And I know he was a courageous man. I think one of the things I'll remember the most was on Election Day in 2016, Rush signed off his broadcast. And I can remember exactly where I was standing outside our office in Nashville, Tennessee. He signed off his broadcast by saying, "Well, tonight we'll find out whether there's more of them or more of us."
Mm.
That's how he described the 2016 election. And the thing about that speaks so strongly to me was that Rush wasn't certain. He didn't know. He didn't know that the election was going to be won. He wasn't sure, and neither was anyone else. That was 2016. So the point was there was a vulnerability. He understood this was a contest for the nation and that it could go in lots of different directions. But at the end of it all, because of his faith, because of his belief in transcendent truth and his belief in the virtue of the American ideal, he never gave up hope that if we kept getting off the ground and kept trying, we could reach the promise of America.
Mm-hmm. What do you think happened in his life when you think about what you described earlier as being a champion for the cause of America and really understanding the ideal, the thought? You know, we use the expression sometimes the American dream, and that can mean different things to different people. But I go back and I think about true history. If I were to use one word that I think would be the aim of his loyalty, it would be toward the accurate history, the history of America, America's history, and not a revised history. We have people, we have leaders, we have politicians today that are trying to revise, and they're doing it. They're doing it with a lot of our institutions, our colleges. It's being revised. It's not our history at all. But Rush was firm for the love of America's true history.
And I think that's because Rush was raised correctly. Rush was raised with parents and family members that were convinced and convicted of the American founding and of the integrity of America's founding, and that it was worth investing, and that it had applied, that it carried over, that the ideas carried forward. Now, Rush was no defender of anybody's sinfulness, including his own. and his own personal brokenness in life, his challenge with prescription drugs and painkillers because of what he went through with physical injury and the fact that he got hooked and that he had to get off and that that's what cost him his hearing most likely. I mean, this was a very transparent man who was not perfect. Rush was married multiple times, never anything anybody was comfortable with. He was not in any way, shape, or form a perfect human being. But he's one of those guys that the first pastor I ever had in my life said, look, now that you're a Christian, don't think you're not going to sin. My advice to you is the Bible says, when you do, ask God to forgive you and get up and keep walking in the right direction. And I think that's true for everybody. And so while Rush was this super big personality, and that was the lane that he chose, and he met that lane, he never failed to deliver. He never was that guy 24 hours a day. He knew when he had to be the super personality, but he never stopped to be a real human being either. And he was willing to acknowledge that. So it was a unique blend. He was genuine. He truly believed what he told us. And I think what he told us, for the most part, was right.
Well, now we have this big question that is going to be out there. And I know that it's already one that people are avoiding answering because there is not a good answer. And I agree with what we just read a while ago from Dave, who basically said that there's not going to be anybody that can fill his shoes. There are other talk show hosts, but I do believe that there is something to be said about an ideal and a high bar, a watermark, if you will. Rush has set the watermark for someone who, A, is able to speak to the real issues that are guiding us, and those real issues meaning real in the sense of good value. He was able to speak to those consistently throughout his entire career. He was able to speak to it fearlessly, and he was able to speak to it with humor. That combination, I don't know that there's anybody alive that could ever deliver the same way he did.
Well, at that point, we say thanks be to God for his gifts that he gives to humans, and that we got to see some of God's gifting on best display in the life of Rush Limbaugh. And now, as to the work that must go on, Mike, that's up to you and me. We got started a year after Rush Limbaugh with a different model, and that's part of it. Rush had that lane so filled up that, you know, if you were trying to be a Rush Limbaugh imitator, good luck with that.
Really?
There was never room for two, nor should there ever have been. And that being the case, you know, there's nobody who could replace Teddy Roosevelt. That's why we ended up with a disastrous election in 1912 and Woodrow Wilson got elected, because nobody could replace Teddy and Teddy wouldn't go away. And then when, you know, Teddy lost as the Bull Moose candidate, we were in big trouble. There are some personalities that you just aren't going to replace. That happens. Okay, now the question is, what has that ministry, if you will, what has that gift in the world sired? Are there other people now who are walking in the same direction? And there are lots. There's the Mark Radio Network. There's your broadcast. I'd like to believe the Public Square is a part of that as we go across both commercial and non-commercial networks. Now, our model's a little different because we intentionally built it around a concept, the Public Square, not an individual, so that we'd like to believe we can be going on for another generation of programming. But there needs to be lots of people who become salt and light and shout from the rooftop and teach around the dining room table as well, who speak from the pulpit and who speak in the boardroom and who speak on the shop floor and at the water cooler and just friend to friend. We need more people to tell the truth and to build relationships so that at the end, you feel like you're talking to a friend.
I love that. If there's one thing, if there's one attribute that I believe can be passed on from our study of this guy. And I first heard him in Pennsylvania. I was up there for a conference and literally was driving from this one city back to Pittsburgh to catch a plane to fly back to Florida. And I heard this guy named Rush on the radio for the first time. And on my very first day of listening to him, I was hooked. I mean, that's how powerful he was. So if there's one thing that I hope that all of us, and this would be for radio guys, this would be for pastors, honestly, and that would be that we would all stand, whatever we're doing, wherever we're talking, whatever we are saying, that we would do it with the kind of courage that this man did it. He did it with courage.
I couldn't say it any better, Mike.
Man, I'm going to miss him. I can't, I just can't believe that it's happened. And like you said at the beginning, Dave, it's true. We all knew it was coming because he had let us know that. And that's another wonderful thing about him. He was so transparent. You know, we all knew he was kidding. We all knew. And some people just couldn't stand him and wouldn't listen to him because of that proposed arrogance that he would put out there. But boy, I laughed. This man made me laugh so much. And then what he would say would fire me up as equally powerfully as what his humor had set off in my own heart with laughter. I just felt motivated because of what he said. So I'm grateful for you. I want you to know that I believe that the mantle that you guys are carrying is going to be one that is making a difference at the public square. And I'm so thankful to have you come over and share that with me on my little program that we have here on the Shepherd Radio Network. But we just wanted to pause today to give homage to a great influencer in America, one who has influenced us in more ways than we can describe, and that was Rush Limbaugh. And I'm grateful to know that at the end he did make his faith so profoundly known to his listeners, and that's at the end of the day, that's what causes us all to smile just a little bit more.
Well, Mike, we all lost a friend, and America lost one of the best friends she's ever had. But this much I'm certain. Rush met the boss, and now all things will be well.
All things are well, and thank God that that can be for all believers the same way. And my goodness, that is a great hope that we have indeed. I so appreciate every time you're on with me, Dave Zanotti. Thank you. And your Public Square program just continues to ring out the call for true liberty, for true freedom, found first in Jesus, worth fighting for here in America.
Thanks, Mike. Always good to talk to you.
All right. We'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Hey, friends, and welcome back to the program. On the line with me right now, I'm so excited to talk to this guy, Todd Nettleton. I hear his voice all the time. Listeners here on The Shepherd do. He's the host of the program that's on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, across the network called Voice of the Martyrs. And Todd Nettleton, it is great to have you back on with me. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be with you.
You know, we're here today to talk about the fact that you have an incredible milestone just almost on us now, the release of a brand new book. I believe it's your first book, and it's called When Faith is Forbidden. Now, that is a that is an appropriate theme for you because you deal with this whole issue of persecution, being a martyr for Jesus. Thankfully, not all who are persecuted become a martyr, but there are many, many, many throughout time who have. And to draw attention to it the way you do, man, it is so helpful. Thank you for doing that.
Well, it is my privilege. And I, you know, I'm getting ready to celebrate 23 years working at the Voice of the Martyrs. And this book is in many ways the culmination of that 23 years. These are 40 of the most inspiring, the most powerful stories that I've heard from persecuted Christians during that 40 years or that 23 year span. And I just am so excited for readers. And the premise of the book is, hey, why don't you come with me? Let's go on a trip together. Let's go sit down with Christians from Iran or Christians in China or Christians in other parts of the world. Let's sit down. Let's have a cup of tea. Let's hear their story. And that's what these are, is 40 of those stories.
That is such a great concept. And I love this idea, this kind of concept that you've introduced, a 40-day journey. So you're really inviting the listeners to just come alongside you and to kind of just meet these people face to face, as it were, in this virtual world that we're living today, my friend. That is a very common thought, to do it virtually. But boy, to be able to be right there, to kind of catch the scenes, maybe even to smell some of the smells of the journey, that is really a great concept for your book, and I can't wait to see it.
Well, I am very excited about it, and I'm thankful that it has my name on the cover. I'm very humbled that the Lord would allow me to tell these stories, but the heroes of the book is certainly not the guy who wrote it. The heroes of the book are these amazing brothers and sisters some of them have been to prison. Some of them have been beaten for their faith in Christ. Some of them have had loved ones killed because of their faith in Christ. They're certainly the heroes of this new book, When Faith is Forbidden.
You know, Todd, when I listen to your program on the weekends, and it is something that I really enjoy because of the fact that you have a wide range. It's not just like a little small slice of the pie of people who are doing missions work or people who are in other countries facing severe persecution. You meet with people that come from all different walks, all different groups. Their stories are just about as unique and different as they are as individuals. And so it's always interesting to hear the stories of the people that you have on. I mean, you've got a wide canvas there, don't you?
We do have really an amazing canvas, and the Voice of the Martyrs is active in more than 70 countries around the world. So there's a lot of different countries that we can draw from. We are active in a lot of different ways, delivering Bibles, helping Christians who have been persecuted, supporting frontline workers in those countries. So there's a lot of different sort of ministry aspects that we can talk about. Mm-hmm. And the Lord has been amazingly good to bring some of those stories across our path and bring some of those people into our little studio here in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and allow me to sit down and ask them questions and just hear about their work, hear about their life, but most importantly, hear about the faithfulness of God to sustain them and encourage them and support them, even in places where it is very dangerous to be a Christian.
What led you in your own life, Todd, to have such a heart as you do for those who are being persecuted? What do you think was the reason, or can you think of the maybe event or a word that was spoken over you that kind of pointed you that way?
You know, I think the thing that I would point to is 1982. I think it was September the 8th, 1982. I was 12 years old, and our family packed up from our comfortable, nice life in Southern California, and we moved to Papua New Guinea for 4 years, where my parents served as missionaries. Uh-huh. And so that was kind of the launching point of what has led me to work at Voice of the Martyrs, led me to work in international ministry, is just that experience of moving to a different country, a different culture, a different language, different food. And I really came, part of that was just very practical. I love to travel. I love to get on an airplane. I love to go someplace I've never been before and try to figure out, you know, a little bit about the culture. Hey, how do I say hello? How do I find a bathroom? How do I make friends in this culture? What is their way of showing friendship, showing appreciation? But part of it is also an appreciation for God's work around the world. And the fact that, you know, I speak English in America and God moves me and speaks to me in English. But I have brothers in China who don't speak a word of English. And Jesus speaks to them in Chinese. He speaks to them in the context of their culture. And I have brothers and sisters in Iran, and Jesus speaks to them in Farsi, and he speaks to them in the context and in the culture of Iran. And understanding that, I really trace it back to that day in 1982 when we left America and moved overseas, and that really planted a lot of seeds into my life that are bearing fruit today for the kingdom.
That had to be such an amazing experience as a young person going through at that age, because you're obviously just about ready to turn into the teen years, and your teen years would have been spent differently than obviously mine and so many of our listeners, because you're living there in Papua New Guinea. Now, that is an area. Tell us about the uniqueness of that area that you experienced as a 12-year-old.
You know, at the time, it was actually quite traumatic for me. I was just ready to go into junior high. At our particular school, junior high was where you got to play sports. And so I was ready to get involved in sports. I'm a huge sports fan. And so when my parents, you know, we kind of had a family conference and they said, well, we feel like God is calling us to pack up and move. My first response was, well, no, I actually like my life here. I don't really want to move.
Oh, I can only imagine.
So, yeah, there was some trauma that was involved in just packing up and going. But over time and with hindsight, I have really seen how God was planting seeds into my life, and God was planting things into me that would bear fruit down the road. And even just, you know, one of the things about Americans is we tend to think that our way of doing things is right. And we go to a different country and we kind of say, well, why aren't you doing it like Americans do it? We do it the right way. You're doing it wrong. As you live in another culture and as you encounter people, you start to understand it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's just a matter of different. And so when I go into another country now, I don't necessarily come with that attitude of, well, hey, you really should do things my way. I come with an attitude of, wow, I want to figure out how you do things, and because the way you do things is good too. That attitude is very valuable to me in the work that I do now. And it's an attitude that was born out of those experiences as a young teenager.
When you talk to people from these different countries now, Todd, on your program or in your conversations during the week when you're setting up the next week's show, do you find yourselves often using your background in your own life as a relating point to what they're going through?
Sometimes it is a relating point. I think of I just had a conversation very recently with a lady who was a missionary kid, just like me, and she actually was in Liberia. My parents served for a time in Liberia, and so that was definitely a connecting point with her. I think the other thing that helps me as I sit down for those conversations is just the experiences over the last 20 years working at BOM. And so I come into the conversation with usually at least a basic understanding of what life is like in that country that this person is from or where they are working. What are the challenges? What does persecution look like? I've had enough experience and had those years to kind of gain that knowledge. And so that helps to kind of at least begin the conversation with a baseline understanding of what their life is like and what their ministry looks like. So that is definitely helpful as I sit down in the studio and record an interview.
Well, what I love about your interviews, Todd, is the fact that you are so warm and you have this way of identifying. And it's almost like every time I hear you talk to somebody, it's almost like you are their best friend. And I love that aspect about how you are able to do that. And one of the more recent ones that my wife and I were just completely, I mean, we were glued. All right, we couldn't move. We were listening to you. Both of us had COVID in the end of December, and my goodness, that was a trip in itself. But we're getting better, and we're sitting there on a Saturday, and we're listening to you as you interview Gracia Burnham. And that was one of the most interesting interviews. And I followed up. I was so moved by your interview with her that I contacted Gracia's website and requested, and she was gracious to spend an hour with me on my show. And it was, I just want you to know, thank you, because of just the way that you open up our world to what these people are facing. And Gracia's story was amazing, wasn't it?
It was amazing. And, you know, I think one of the gifts that God has given me is just curiosity. I am a very curious person. And so when I sit down with someone, I believe everybody has a story. If you ask the right questions and really show an interest, I think everybody has a story. And so to sit down with someone like Gracia, and I have to tell you, one of my most proud moments as a radio person, as a host, was I asked a question of Gracia, and you know, Gracia's been interviewed all over the world, all over the media. Some big names that we've all heard of have interviewed Gracia Burnham. And I asked her a question, and she said, you know, no one has ever asked me that before. And I thought, yes, that's a mark of great
yes.
honor to say, hey, I asked a question that nobody else had thought of. So I love Gracia, and I so appreciate the thing I really appreciate about her is she is very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she could come back and say, kind of present the heroic side of the story of, hey, we were out in the jungle and we were praying 24/7 and we were singing praises to the Lord. She is very transparent to say, you know what? There were days in the jungle that I was mad at God. I didn't understand why he was allowing this to happen. I was frustrated. I was angry. And even in those days, God ministered to me. God was faithful. God was gracious, even when I was not gracious and when I was being angry. I love her for being that transparent. And I think it makes her story approachable for all of us, because
yes.
I think all of us can say, yep, if I was being held hostage, I would be mad too. I would be frustrated too. And so that's one thing I just love about Gracia, is just her transparency and her honesty to give the story with warts and all.
Yeah, and you know, that is exactly what the Bible does, isn't it? Because the Bible does not filter out all of the human and sinful, and maybe even our belly aching, if I could use the term. It doesn't filter all that out. It leaves it right there. So I think a homogenized story, it's not relatable. But when you read and you hear in your interviews these stories, it causes us, because I feel like I can feel some of the angst that they've naturally gone through. And certainly that was true with Gracia and her husband. I tell you what, just listening to the stories of her and Martin, that was an unbelievable experience for me. And to think that not only did I get to hear it and you got to interview her, but her story was captured in the newscasts around America and the world because of just the uniqueness of that story.
It is amazing how God gives someone like Gracia a platform. And I think it is directly related to the fact that she was honest. She mm-hmm. was transparent. And the faithfulness of God just shines through in her story. And I think God said, hey, this is someone who will use this platform well. So he allowed her to speak to so many people. And like I say, I'm a huge fan of Gracia and a huge admirer of her.
Well, tell us a little bit about your book. When did the idea to write this one come about? Has it been something you've been working on for a while?
Sadly, it's something I've been working on for years.
That's all right.
I'm hesitant to admit. Sometimes I am not a particularly disciplined person. I am very creative. I have a lot of ideas, and sometimes I'm not good at follow through on my ideas. And if my wife was here, she'd be nodding her head up and down, yes, yes, yes. I started thinking about this several years ago, and just the idea that, you know, I've heard these amazing stories. I've met these amazing brothers and sisters. How can I make a permanent record of that? How can I create something that will be read long after I'm dead so that other Christians can meet these brothers and sisters as well? And so mm-hmm. I had this idea, and I had actually written a few of the chapters, written a few of the stories, but I never seemed to be able to really make consistent progress on it. And I enlisted a couple years ago a guy that I called my writing accountability partner, and he was a friend of mine, a former coworker at Voice of the Martyrs, and I said, listen, I really want to get this done. I'm not making progress on it. I need you to help me. And so every week, if he did not receive a chapter in the email box, he would ping me, either send me an email or send me a text message and say, "Hey, I didn't get a chapter this weekend. What's going on?" And that was a great thing for me because it really helped me to make steady progress and helped me to finish the manuscript. And now it's a book. You can hold it in your hand. And I'm so excited for people to read these stories and be impacted by these testimonies.
I think the release date, what, is March 2nd, I believe? Is that right?
March the 2nd. Yep. It's available now for pre-order everywhere you buy books, but the actual release date is March the 2nd.
Now, tell us about the whole process of publishing this book. Is this a self-published, or are you working with a group, or how did that work?
We are, the publisher of the book is Moody Publishers. So Moody is publishing it, and it came about, you know, Voice of the Martyrs obviously has lots of contacts in the publishing world. Our thought process was, because my involvement in radio and in Voice of the Martyrs radio, the connection to Moody was kind of a natural thing because obviously Moody's very involved in radio as well. And
sure.
So we sent it to Moody Publishers, and they just instantly really saw the potential of it and really joined in saying, yes, these are stories that people need to read. These are stories people need to know. And so they just very quickly caught the vision for the book and jumped on board and said, absolutely, we want to publish it. They actually rushed the publishing process so that it is coming out in about 14 months, which I guess normally the publishing process is about 2 years. So 14 months from first manuscript to actual release date. And they have done a great job. The design of the book that the Moody design team came up with is just phenomenal. It looks spectacular. It's something you want to hold in your hand. You want to have it on your bookshelf. So I'm very, very thankful for how Moody has responded and how they've gotten behind it.
It is so exciting to hear that, because so many authors today who have book ideas and they may be fantastic books, but we all know what a world in which we live, how the publishing world turned upside down a couple of years ago. And so many publishers, it's so difficult, but to think that you've got the strong arm of Moody and that wonderful organization, as well known as they are, that's going to help the propagation of this book, getting it out there so much. I'm so happy about that.
Yeah, I am absolutely thrilled by that. And, you know, my coworkers at Voice of the Martyrs have been amazingly supportive too. So March 2 is a big day for me. I've got it circled on my calendar. It's going to be very exciting.
Oh, that's tremendous. Now, Todd, tell us a little bit about the fact that it's not only being released as a printed book, but there's so many people enjoy audiobooks too. And I know that you were there for that. So tell us that story.
Yeah, just within the last week, I recorded the audiobook, which was a first-time experience for me. I've certainly never done that before. I've done a lot of radio interviews. I've done a lot of radio programs. And so recording the audiobook, though, just sitting in a little tiny soundproof room and reading basically for 2 days from morning until late afternoon was somewhat of a strain, somewhat of an adventure.
Oh, man.
Just from the voice standpoint. But the thing that excites me about it, and I would even say it thrills me, is my grandchildren, who I don't have any grandchildren yet, so they're not born yet, but my grandchildren and even their grandchildren mm-hmm. will be able to hear me tell these stories, and they'll be able to meet these brothers and sisters hearing my voice deliver that story. And as I went into the studio, that's what I was thinking about, is isn't this an amazing privilege that I'm telling my great-great-grandchildren, who I may not even live to meet, the stories of brothers and sisters who were willing to suffer for Christ. So that's my hope for the audiobook, and the plan is it will be released right around the same time as the print book on March the 2nd. And I know this is a lot of people. I'm personally not an audiobook guy, but I know so many people who are, and I've had people ask me now, is your book going to be available in audiobook? And I said, yes, it is. And I know for a lot of people, that's how they read books. And so I'm very excited to offer that. And I'm excited that it's my voice, that I get to tell these stories.
Well, your voice is known for this very thing. And to think about the fact that you're giving a narrative on this, I think that kind of a book is especially effective and helpful because you're really telling stories. And I get that you're a good storyteller, Todd. I can already tell that in the way you interview your people, because from the moment your show comes on, I feel like I'm being drawn into an episode of some story that is very interesting. And that's what this book is going to do. And you're right. I mean, it is, these things will outlive us, won't they?
That's my hope. That's my hope, is that this will be a book. These will be stories that will impact people who follow Jesus long after I've gone to heaven, that these stories and the faithfulness of Christ will live on. So I'm very, very excited about the book and about the release and about the audiobook as well.
Now, with all these 40-day journey chapters and all of the things that are going on in this book, when you look back at it now that you're on this side of it, the cover's done, you know what's there, is there a particular story in there that really just gets you every time you think about it or when you read it?
You know, there is. It's a story of Iman, and I remember I had the proof pages of the book, and so we're kind of, you know, final edits, final proofs, and I took it with me on an airplane. I was flying somewhere, and I'm reading this story, and I'm sitting there on the airplane, and I just began to weep at the power of the story of our brother Iman. And I'll just share briefly a little bit about him. As he began to tell me his story, the first thing he said, I want you to understand, I'm a very competitive person. He said when he was in the Iranian army, he told his commander, listen, you need to send me to where the fighting is the fiercest. I want to be martyred for my country in the next 24 hours. I don't want to waste time. And he said, when I was a drug addict, I wanted to be the best drug addict that anyone could ever be. I wanted to use every drug that was available, and I wanted to use more of every drug than anyone else was using. And he said, when I was a thief, I wanted to steal more than any other thief was stealing. And if somebody had tried to steal something and failed, I saw that as a competition. Like, I'm going to be successful where this other person failed. I'm going to steal that thing that no one else could steal. So he said, I want you to understand that I've always been this really competitive, really driven person.
Mm-hmm.
So Iman's story is that he was a drug addict, and through really a miraculous situation, he met Jesus, and Jesus healed him of his addiction. Almost instantly, just healed him. He had no desire for drugs. And so that competitive fire that had driven him as a soldier and as a drug addict and as a thief was now turned to following Jesus Christ. And his attitude was, I don't want to be an average disciple of Christ. I want to be the best disciple that Christ has ever had. I want to be the best witness for Christ that anyone could possibly be. I want to tell every single person I meet about Jesus Christ. And Iman has had some amazing opportunities. He told me a story of being arrested. He got arrested, and they took him to the police station, and they sat him down next to two guys who were in like shackles. They were completely bound up. And as he sat there and began talking to these guys, he realized that they had been charged with a capital crime. They were facing the death penalty. And he began to share Christ with them. Both of them prayed with him and received Christ in that police station while he's sitting there next to them. And he said, almost as soon as they finished praying, the police came out and they said, you know, Iman, you've been very kind to us. This is actually all a mistake, and you can just go. Just go on out. You can just leave.
Oh.
And he said these two guys who are in death row, there's tears streaming down their face. He hugged them, and the police are like, you've been sitting by these guys for 15 minutes. Why are you hugging them? It's like they're total strangers to you. Why are you hugging them? But these guys are weeping. He had led them to Christ. He walked out the door. He never saw them again. But his attitude was, if I get arrested, that must mean that the policeman is ready to hear the gospel. Mm-hmm. And if it's not the policeman, then it must be somebody that I'm sitting beside on the bench, even if they're enchained, even if they're facing the death penalty, they must be ready to hear the gospel. His attitude is, there's no chance encounters. There's no accidental conversations. Every person that he talks to is somebody that God has prepared to hear the gospel. And that's how he lives his life. He says, I want to be the best disciple. I want to be the best evangelist. I want to share Christ with every single person I meet. That's the example of Brother Iman. And he has some amazing stories of sharing Christ in police stations, in prison when he got arrested. That's one of the stories that's in this brand new book, When Faith is Forbidden.
Well, I love the title. I love the concept. I love the fact that you're telling the story in the audiobook. But most important, I'm so excited to see the glory that God is going to receive from these stories, because people are indeed laying down their lives for the kingdom, and the gospel is being preached. And I just pray, Todd, that this book just goes into the hands of thousands and thousands of people who will be changed as they read the story and are encouraged in their faith, man. And we're praying for that. And I just want to say thank you for coming back on, Todd Nettleton. He is the voice of the martyrs. He's the guy that we get to hear every week on this show. And thank you for being here with me today on this program. And we wish you the best. And by the way, how's it going out there in Oklahoma? Are you staying warm? Are you got power?
I have shoveled snow off of my driveway 3 times this week.
Oh, my.
And normally, I don't have to shovel snow but about once every 3 years. So 3 times in the same week is pretty traumatic for me. And like I said, I grew up in Southern California, so I don't love snow. In fact, I don't even like snow. So
that's it.
We're ready for some sunshine and ready for it to get above freezing.
Well, I'm just going to have to say this. It's 84 here in Orlando today, so I'm sorry about that, brother.
Oh, yeah, tease me while I don't
care. Todd Nettleton, can't wait to have you back on my show in the future. Thank you so much for sharing this exciting book. And folks, be watching for it March 2nd. You can pre-order it now. Todd, what's the web address?
WhenFaithIsForbidden.com.
WhenFaithIsForbidden.com. Friends, get your copy. This is going to be a good one. Todd Nettleton, thank you. And friends, thanks for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.